Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, Jimmy Butler is growing frustrated with how the Wolves have handled his trade request. We've got the latest out of Minnesota.
And seeing how things went sour with Tom Thibodeau acting as both coach and general manager, should the Heat one day go down the same path as Eric Spoelstra? Just a reminder to stay tuned for our Heat season preview coming up within the next few days. And as always, thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where we break down every news item, rumor, game, and more. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and the league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
We've seen how things could go wrong when head coaches also share the title of general manager. And according to one report, the Heat could be going down that road. We'll talk about that and how Justice Winslow can become a better scorer later on. But let's start with this report by The Athletic's Sam Amick. Jimmy Butler and his people are, quote, increasingly frustrated with Minnesota's handling of trade talks and seriously question whether the Timberwolves are truly trying to find a deal. Now, Minnesota's asking price remains way too high, as we've already heard. Their counteroffers are, quote, downright delusional. We've heard reports that they were asking Philadelphia for Ben Simmons, right? So, I mean, delusional. Things can change at any point, but it's been a long process already. Do you see the situation, David, spilling into the regular season?
We're about 2 weeks away as of our recording, so it seems entirely possible. If Minnesota's front office is as dysfunctional and inconsistent as far as what they want in return for Butler, there's no need to think that that's going to be clarified at any point over the next couple of weeks. I mean, we've seen how this has already progressed over the last couple of weeks with Butler making his original request. And of course, in that same piece by Amick, where Butler or Butler's representatives seem to be under the impression that he made that clear to Tom Thibodeau months before the meeting that took place just a couple of weeks ago. But in any case, the point being that, you know, Butler's made his original trade request to Tom Thibodeau. Then there were reports that Thibodeau was going to make that trade right away, then not make that trade. Then Glenn Taylor, the team's owner, was going to be fielding, you know, any kind of trade offers in exchange for Butler during the owners meeting in New York a few days later. And it's progressed to this point now where we're not sure exactly what's going on in Minnesota. I don't think that there's any reason that will be taken care of or resolved over the next few weeks, to be honest with you. You look at the previous 14 years, why they were in a playoff drought for as long as they were, the mismanagement of coaching, selecting the wrong players in the draft, choosing the wrong front office members, David Kahn comes to mind. All these things that have beleaguered the Minnesota Timberwolves franchise, and that's why they've been in such a funk as far as their playoff drought is concerned for the past 20 years practically. You don't see that clearing up over the next couple of days, and so I think it's more likely to spill over to the regular season. Look, I'd hoped that it was going to be resolved, but the more it draws on like this, I just don't know that anybody's going to be able to resolve this. Either Minnesota has to come to the conclusion. That they want somebody in camp right away so that they can plug them in and help contribute to wins this season, or they're just going to say, you know what, we don't care about this season at all. It's all about focusing on Karl Anthony Towns. And if that's the case, then they don't necessarily want somebody just to help gain a few wins this year. It's about pieces that will fit alongside Towns in the future.
And they've not only mismanaged this whole thing with Jimmy Butler, but they have mismanaged the thing with Towns. I mean, there's reports that, you know, it was weird that Karl Anthony Towns signed that extension as basically as soon as they announced that they were trying to trade Jimmy Butler. Not announced, but it was reported that they were unofficially moving on from Butler. But there's been reports that Towns was basically waiting for that he didn't want to sign an extension if he had, knowing that Jimmy Butler was going to be there, and that he was almost demanding a trade as much as Jimmy Butler was demanding a trade, right? He was demanding a trade of Butler just as much as Butler was. And so if you mismanage this, not only with Jimmy Butler, and people keep going back to that trade, like, oh, the Minnesota, they made the wrong trade. They shouldn't have traded so many pieces. I think the trade was fine. I mean, this is a guy who, before he got hurt, had Minnesota at the number three seed in the West. I mean, he is a darn good player. He was top five in the MVP race.
Yes.
I mean, before that injury, he was a really, really good player for them, but they've mismanaged his situation. It looks like they might mismanage the Towns situation. They gotta make a move here. It's just like, it's cut your losses, right? Like, you mismanage this one situation. That doesn't mean you need to mismanage the next one. Don't be stubborn. And it seems like Thibodeau right now is and maybe even Glenn Taylor right now are just being stubborn, that they want more than what they traded away for Jimmy Butler.
See, I don't think it's Thibodeau. I don't know that from the reports that we've gotten, look, Thibodeau is absolutely a stubborn.
Nobody knows who it is, yeah, right? That's the problem.
That is a good point. You know, I think from Thibodeau's perspective, he likes Jimmy. Jimmy's his guy. You know, we've heard a lot about Thibodeau's loyalty to his players and hence the Timberwolves moniker. But at the same time, I think he just wants to have everybody come into camp, work hard, and be on the same page. Of course, that's easier said than done. And Karl-Anthony Towns and Wiggins obviously have butted heads with Butler and his acerbic style. So I just don't think that that's going to be resolved either. So at this point, Thibodeau has to understand what's clear to everybody else, that Butler's never returning to the team, that if he did, it would be absolute chaos, that you risk pissing off your multi-million dollar superstar in Karl-Anthony Towns. I just don't see why you're not willing to just, you know, set the...
They need to do something.
Yeah, they absolutely
do. It's insane. And Glenn Taylor, and all, he should fire Thibodeau too. I mean, it's time to clean house.
You know,
it hasn't worked.
I saw some activity about it when it was tweeting from our account. And it was, you know, I mentioned about Thibodeau and what his future might be with the team. Some people seem to think that Thibodeau will never get another coaching gig again. Where do you stand on that? Because I feel pretty confident that he will.
Yeah.
That's,
I mean, he's an ultimate... His ultimate retread. I mean, yeah. He's a good coach. He is a good basketball coach. He is just not a general manager. And that's... he shouldn't have been given that job. We'll talk... look, that's a whole other thing. But for the Heat, it could actually work out a little bit if this thing goes into the regular season for a few reasons. Number one... Wayne Ellington has a really, really tradable contract, but he can't be traded until December. So if this goes into December, it could help Miami. You never know. I mean, might. And if, if it does, then that Wayne Ellington contract starts to get involved, and just Miami has one extra piece. It's not a big deal, but it is something worth mentioning. The second part of it is that it allows for guys like Hassan Whiteside, who's now hitting threes from the corner and setting great screens, to maybe bump up his trade value a little bit more. Allows for Deion Waiters to get back on the court, and maybe Minnesota gets eyes on him a little bit. James Johnson, same thing, coming back from his sports hernia. I mean, this could actually help Miami if Minnesota isn't sold on these pieces that Miami is currently putting on the table, right? And so those two things, I think, factor in when we talk about the Heat's perspective of this. And then there's other teams like the Rockets and possibly still the Clippers that could get involved in this thing. But when it comes down to it, Minnesota's going to have to take their asking price down, because if they're getting downright delusional about their counteroffers, then I don't see them ever falling in love with a guy like Whiteside. So they need to calm down on their counteroffers here.
No, I'd floated the possibility that this kind of information was being leaked by Butler's representatives in a leverage move to kind of facilitate a trade. You stand anywhere on that? Because I feel like by putting it out that it's all on Minnesota, and you know, we've heard reports of this before, obviously, and we've seen evidence of it over the last 15, 20 years. You know, obviously there's dysfunction there, but at the same time, the fact that this report is coming out now as the preseason's already begun, I feel like it's more of a leverage move from Butler's agents and representatives more than anything else to kind of say, look, we're trying to get something done for the sake of the Timberwolves. We want to move on. Jimmy's ready to join whatever team he's going to sign with in the summer.
Yeah.
It's all on Minnesota at this point. And
I agree with that. I think Minnesota ends up looking like the bad guy here. The Minnesota front office ends up looking like the bad guy here. I think that's definitely what... It's not coming out of the Timberwolves front office that they're being downright delusional. That's for sure. So
that's a good point.
It's definitely coming from Jimmy Butler. And look, he's right. I mean, hey, let's move on with this. And look, the Thibodeau thing hasn't worked as far as general manager goes, but there's a recent report, Eric Spoelstra, one of the best coaches in the NBA, could he also become Miami's general manager one day? We'll talk about that next. But first, Locked On NFL is becoming a favorite daily NFL podcast on Mondays. It's a local expert on the biggest stories from the weekend. On Tuesdays, former NFL and Miami Dolphins quarterback Sage Rosenfels joins host Matt Williamson, who will have some of the brightest voices in football on throughout the week. And then on Friday, he's making his picks for the weekend, available on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Justice Winslow struggled to score in his first preseason game. We'll talk about how he can get better later on, but I want to talk about this idea of coaches also acting as general managers, because the Washington Post's Tim Bontemps wrote in his Monday morning post-up that Eric Spoelstra would likely take on, and this is his word, emperor coach role with the Heat once Pat Riley decides to step away. Emperor coach being guys like Doc Rivers recently, Tom Thibodeau right now. We've seen that these situations recently haven't necessarily worked. There are exceptions, Greg Popovich in San Antonio, but he's got R.C. Buford there. Do you think this is a good idea, Eric Spoelstra becoming this emperor coach type role when Riley eventually decides to step away from the team?
I do not. I think it's a terrible idea, and I don't even think it's one that Eric would entertain, to be honest with you. He is a nuts and bolts guy. I don't think he's interested in forming a big picture team. I think he trusts the front office and the management and the guys that they have to replace Riley. I don't think Bontemps is working off of any sources here. He was just basically floating the idea around, knowing that Spoelstra's been with the organization for as long as he has, that he seems like a logistical fit. I don't think he's actually saying that Spoelstra is in line to become the emperor coach, which is, of course, a phrase that Bontemps created. You know, I don't see that, more of an educated guess
yeah, than a full-on sourced report.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it seems to make sense given, as Bontemps points out, that Spoelstra has been with the franchise for so long that he's worked his way up the ranks, that he's not going anywhere. He's not going to get fired by the Heat, so to speak. It's all about him, you know, continuing his tenure there for as long as he wants it, so that once the day comes that Riley steps down, the next logical move would be for Spoelstra to assume an even bigger role potentially as this quote-unquote emperor coach. But I just don't think that that's something that Spoelstra wants. Like, he strikes me as the kind of person that just wants to the nuts and bolts of coaching, working with guys day in and day out. You know, to think about the guy who stays in that locker room or stays on the practice floor, floating passes into players and having them shoot and shoot and shoot so that they can continue to get better. That doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who wants to get on the phone and make phone calls around the league to gauge trade interest and things of that sort.
I could see it being more. I actually think he's going to take on a much bigger role when Riley leaves, but I could see it being more in that Popovich type of template than this Tom Thibodeau really acting as general manager and head coach, and not because like Popovich has R.C. Buford to do all the nuts and bolts of the general manager job, of the facilitating salaries, talking with agents, talking with players, facilitating trade talks and things like that, where Popovich is more of a macro guy where these are the kind of players I'm looking for because I'm trying to coach this kind of style. This is the team I want to zig when the NBA zags, blah, sure, blah, blah. I could see Spoelstra doing a similar thing. I could see Spoelstra not necessarily – like if Spo and Andy Ellsberg – and Andy Ellsberg was still the general manager, right? I could see Spo just being like, you're handling all the cap stuff. You're handling all the salary negotiations. You're handling the trade talks. This is what I'm looking for. I could see it being that sort of partnership, but I don't think – like you, it's definitely not going to be in the Tibbs role. It's not going to be doing two jobs at once, which is a disaster. It's going to be more of a partnership, more of a team. And look, there's also guys like Shane Battier who, and Alonzo Mourning and guys who look to have a future with this organization if they decide to stay here. Battier handling analytics, Alonzo Mourning doing whatever it is that he actually does with this organization.
Player development.
Player development or whatever. I think it's going to be, you know, multiple voices in the room. But at the end of the day, Pat Riley has talked about how he wants Spoelstra to be the voice, and I think that Spoelstra will be the ultimate voice. And look, after this, these last couple of years of Pat Riley basically putting Spoelstra below average players, and Spoelstra being forced to make them into above average to borderline good players, which he has done, then look, I could understand why Spo might be like, you know what? I want to have a little bit more say, a little bit more control of who you're giving me to work with, because I'm the guy who ultimately has to work with these guys.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because to me, I'm hearing everything that you're saying, and I feel like Spoelstra already has that voice. I think he's one of the guys in the room, along with Nick Arison and Shane and potentially Alonzo and Riley and Ellsberg, et cetera. You know, I think it's a decision by committee kind of thing, and I think that's worked for most of the Heat's tenure and Riley's tenure, to be honest with you, with the team. He was not the singular voice. We kind of want to see him in that way because he's Riley. He's the Panther prowling along the sidelines in the suits, etc. But the reality is he had Randy Fun there years before Ellisberg was a part of the team. He's had a team surrounding him over the last 20-something years. And Spoelstra is just one more voice and part of that team. So I don't know. Maybe they'll change his title around. Maybe they'll give him. Maybe he'll become the team president, you know, in name only. It'll be mostly just a figurehead thing. Because as far as, like, you know, Popovich is concerned, I think he meets with players. He meets with free agents. He's probably right. The loudest voice in the room. Maybe Buford has something to say. But Popovich being who he is, the guy who connects as much as he does with players. Like, that's the thing. I don't know that Spoelstra is that same kind of guy. Like, Popovich, we saw footage of Popovich, you know, hugging Dwayne Wade on the sideline yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's not Spoelstra. He's not connecting with guys on other teams like that because he's so engrossed in the nitty-gritty of the coaching and the day-to-day that I don't know that he's necessarily reaching out to other players and making those kind of contacts. That's where Riley does come in. And so you don't want
to... Maybe that's the next... Maybe that is the next step, though, because when Riley leaves, who does that, right? And maybe... And look, I'm glad you made that point about the title change because Popovich is head coach and president of the Spurs. He's not general manager. He's just like this, again, emperor coach, to use Bontemps' phrasing here. I could see Spo getting a title bump. You know, I could see it. I mean, this Heat organization is a team that does things like that. They recently gave everybody title bumps, right? They moved everybody up. So I could see them doing something like that. I could see Spo taking on a greater role when it does come to communicating with players. Because somebody's going to your point, exactly. I mean, once Riley goes away, somebody's going to have to do that. And maybe it'll be Alonzo Mourning, but maybe it'll be Eric Spoelstra. And I could see it, and I would understand, and I would agree with it being Spo. One thing that we do know is if the Heat do go down this path, they're going to do it the right way, and they're not going to do it in this way that Minnesota's been doing it, where they just say, hey, you are basically in charge of everything. Do all of the jobs. Like, whatever happens, I could see it being the right thing. And I could see Eric Spoelstra actually, yeah, you're right. He doesn't do those things now, but maybe that's the next step to Spo. Maybe that is the evolution of Eric Spoelstra. Maybe he gets more involved and becomes more of this... you know, not only face of the Heat, but face of the NBA type guy, because I think he has the capacity to do it. I don't know, and I think what you're saying, does he have the willingness to get out there? Maybe. You know, I think he's one of the smarter guys in the NBA, not just from coaches, but he just seems like a really intelligent, smart, ambitious person. I could see him maybe wanting to do that, but like I said, whatever gets sorted out there, regardless of when Pat Riley steps away, I think Spoelstra is going to be basically the guy. Regardless of what his title is or what his capacity is or what he's doing, he's basically going to be the guy once Riley walks away. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he'll probably be the loudest voice, but I think it'll also be dependent on guys like Battier and Nick Harrison, who I think has been groomed for this position for a long time, to be the ones that connect with players on a more approachable basis. Like, again, I think that Spoelstra is just a little bit removed from all that. He's absorbed in the coaching. He's a son of a coach. He wants to keep coaching. You know what I'm saying? He's so engrossed in that I think that takes up a lot. That's not to say that he doesn't connect with his players. I just don't know that he's necessarily interested in connecting with other players. And again, maybe that's the next step in his evolution, but I think it's still going to take others to help. And again, we're just probably going to move on from one member of a team stepping down, Riley, to another stepping up and filling that role, and we'll see who it is. I mean, it's going to continue with a team-wide process, I think. And we should point out that Thibodeau does have Scott Layden in Minnesota, who's technically the team's general manager.
That's a good point, but that's about it. And then Glenn Taylor, who's also only the team's general manager. And it might be in title only, because I'm not sure I'm pretty sure Thibs is the one that keeps getting all the Timberwolves. We're always open to answering your questions that you submit on Twitter or by email here on the show, and we have one about how Justice Winslow can improve his offensive game that we'll get to next. But first, Locked On NBA is here for you every day, not just Tuesdays with us. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories, and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long to get daily news and analysis on everything going on in the league. Available on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Daniel asks on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat, what's the best approach to correcting the deficiency in Justice Winslow's offensive game, which seemed to be everywhere, from difficulties with his at least mid-range jumper to finishing at the rim. Now, we know that Winslow has taken strides in his career going into his fourth season in the NBA. The three-point shot looks smoother, especially when you compare it to his first season. Was converting at 38%, I believe, last season.
Yes.
Even though it was a limited number of attempts. Guys still leave him open, though. He just isn't making that... He didn't make that much of an impression on offense last year, at least from a scoring standpoint. What do you think he needs to do to become a better scorer?
Well, I think you kind of hinted at it right there. I think, you know, guys are sagging off of him so much because they don't fear the legitimacy of that three-point shot. So when he does try to dive to the rim, he's going to be met by multiple defenders there. And he just seems like he's not quite sure what to do once he's up in the air. I don't think he's necessarily the most explosive leaper either. And so I think his shot attempts at the rim, he can't finish in traffic the way we'd like him to, despite his size and whatever athleticism he does possess. It's just not the kind of explosive leaping ability that we've seen like Jay Rich or others possess. I just don't, you know, he's definitely, even though physically he might be the same size as a LeBron James, he's not the same kind of explosive athleticism as a LeBron James. And I know you can say that about 99.9% of the athletes that have ever played in the NBA. But still, as far as like we're talking about Winslow, I just feel like he's not able to leap over those multiple defenders, or he gets a little hung up on what to do. Like, we've seen him go to a finger roll. We've seen him try to use glass. Never quite sure exactly how to finish a shot at the rim. And not until he starts knocking down those three-pointers with much more regularity will those defenders, you know, fear that shot where he can get much more open lanes, I think. And, you know, he did finish at 56% at the rim. Yeah, 56% at the rim last year. Not bad. Probably around league average, but you know, I feel like he could do better given what size he does possess. So I think it's just that combination, a better balance of scoring from the perimeter, and that'll free up his scoring chances at the rim. Where he really struggled was in the mid-range game, and I feel like that's another side of it where he's not quite sure what to do. He gets past maybe that original defender, or he doesn't feel comfortable taking that three-point shot, so he takes a couple steps in, unleashes an 18-19 footer, and that's not exactly a high, you know, efficiency shot, nor is it one that he can knock down, you know, with great ease either. So it's not Dwayne Wade pulling up from 19 feet. We feel much more comfortable Wade taking that long-range shot, even if it's not a three-pointer. Winslow, again, somewhere up in the air, not quite sure how to take that shot. He winds up getting stuck with the ball in his hands, and maybe his shot clock winds down, and next thing you know, he puts up this janky shot. You know, and then to the question, it's not that Winslow's bad offensively. He has a different role to play, one which we saw against San Antonio on Sunday night, which is to be a playmaker and a shot creator for other guys on the team.
You know, that's a good point. And I just feel like, look, he's kind of in this in-between role. He's basically got handed the backup point guard job late in last season. So with that comes a certain responsibility of facilitating and doing things like that. And when guys are playing off of him, you can't blame him for facilitating as much because he's got all the space in the world to diagnose the play and see the court and everything like that. And he's good at it. I mean, he's very good at it. So you could see him doing that. And maybe that was more Spo's reaction to just Winslow not being aggressive, trying to get his own shot, which he hasn't been in his entire career. So he's like, well, if you're not going to try to get your own shot off the ball, I'm going to put you on the ball. And then that way you could, maybe he's just an unselfish player. I mean, maybe that's what it is here. That said, this is basically a contract year for him. He needs to score more. That's what you need when you pick a guy at number 10 like him, who isn't an elite point guard. He isn't an elite facilitator. He's about average at running pick and roll. He's still raw. There's a lot to learn there. And as far as the finishing at the rim goes, he does need to find a regular move. I agree with you. He's not that explosive when it gets to coming in the paint. He only had 15 dunks last year when you compare like that to Josh Richardson, who had 20, which is a pretty big contrast. When you pick a guy at 10, you think he's going to be the more athletic guy than the guy you pick in the second round. But I just think that he needs to be more aggressive when guys are playing off of him because it all starts there. If he's shooting 3 or 4 three-point attempts per game, which I think he needs to be right about there, then all of a sudden maybe and if that new shot is real, if he could maybe he's not shooting 38%, but if he's shooting 35% on three or four attempts per game, that's really good for him. People will start to respect him more as a shooter, and all of a sudden he can use that quick first step that he has to get to the rim. And maybe there's a little bit more space for him to leap and dunk and finish more at a more highly efficient rate when he gets into the paint. I mean, it kind of all starts with that 3-point shot. He's got to take them when he has them.
Yeah, no, we have to. We're in agreement there. So hopefully that'll be the next step here. You know, he took some shots in Sunday's game and didn't knock him down, but the rhythm was there. He seemed comfortable and confident, which I think is an improvement over where he was in his second and third year. Although last year, obviously, there was improvement there. I think it's just another step in the evolution there. Hopefully, that'll become a regular, more consistent part of his repertoire. And if that's the case, it should open up things elsewhere on the floor. And that's what we can look forward to. So, you know, he's making progress. And that's all you can hope for, really. Maybe it's not at the accelerated rate that a lot of fans would like. And given his draft status, that might be what everybody expects. But, you know, there are a lot of lottery picks in the last, you know, 40, 50 years that have never become superstar players, and that seems where Winslow's likely headed. He can be a really, really good role player, though, and as long as he continues to work and evolve, I think that's you're getting a great return on investment.
He's, regardless, has the skill set that is great for the modern NBA. I mean, he's just, he can rebound, he defends the perimeter extremely well, he can handle the ball a little bit. Whatever role that they carve out for him, he's going to be fine.
Shout out to Jared Dubin, who wrote about it for the Step Back. Definitely go check it out. A website that both Wes and I write for. Finished a great piece with art for Elliot from Elliot Gerard, who is going to be contributing to our upcoming Heat season preview. So definitely look for that. We tweeted it out earlier this morning. Great piece on Winslow about what he's able to contribute and how he can continue growing in the future.
We'll be back tomorrow. The Heat play the Hornets. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of that tonight. For now, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. And, of course, make sure to hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or whatever you use to listen. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Thanks for listening. One last thing before you go. If you run a company and you're unhappy with your return from advertising online or in print, try something new and advertise on a podcast here at Locked On Heat. This is a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. More and more people are listening every day. 50% of U.S. households listen to a podcast, and 1 in 5 Americans between ages 18 and 49 listen to at least one a month. That's according to Nielsen. Thanks to the rise in mobile options from iTunes to Spotify and more, to your smart speaker at home, there's more ways than ever to listen to podcasts. Now is the time to get in. Be ahead of your competition and start advertising on a podcast with us. Our rates are reasonable and based on the number of listens, so you get what you pay for, with numbers to back it up. Whereas print, TV, and radio ads are a shot in the dark. You have no idea who is reading, watching, or listening. That's not the case with podcasts. If you want to reach engaged, passionate, and knowledgeable South Floridians, this is the way to do it. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company on the next episode.